Okay, it's May 7th, 2023, 1931 hours. Ward Green with you here. I've been adjusting the EQ on the M1 Max, so, well, with the, on in Mac OS, that is, so that the M1 Max speakers are not so treble loaded. So we're going to try Lou Rawls once again, Jehovah willing. There he is. Okay. There, I think this is him. All right. So here we go. This is Lou Rawls. What's the name of the song? You'll never find. It's a rather unexpected title. Let me see what I can find here. Save As. Lou Rawls. You'll never find another love like mine. That's the actual title of the song. Here we go. May 7th, 2023.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that was a better EQ when I finally get this processed. I had to do quite extensive testing on the EQ using EQ Mac, which is a utility program for Mac OS, and provides a free EQ service along with it. So I'm recording with greatly reduced treble and mid-range when playing through the M1 Max speakers, and then when I play back, of course, or when I play it back for myself to hear it the way other people will listen to it, I have to remove the equalization, of course, play it just with a flat EQ, just the way everyone else does. In other words, without adjusting anything, and then when I play it back, that's the accurate recorded version, as long as there's no EQ on it. I mean, you can EQ it yourself if you want to, if you have that facility. But for today's study, Little Children in the Wild Road, Article Part 2, Chapter 8, Paragraph 8, we're going to hopefully look at this successor, the pharaoh who succeeded Thutmose III. His name was Amenhotep II. And he succeeded Thutmose III when he was 18 years old. And the interesting thing is, it may have been required for him to be 18. And that may be why there's a gap of 8 months before his accession. It's not clear, but there's some debate about it. And some people have argued that his accession occurred 3 years earlier. So we're going to look at this. Start to read now. Amenhotep II is a pharaoh who acceded at age 18 on the first day of 4 Akhet, that's an Egyptian month, which some scholars argue was the date of the beginning of co-rule. Others, his sole rule, the difference being a debated overlap of 3 years. Thutmose III had a known death date of 3 Parrot 30 in his year 54, which is March 15th, 1439 BCE, in the Big Egg, which is the blessed genealogical Egyptian chronology. 8 months before the accession date of Amenhotep II on November 16th, 1439 BCE. That's when the death of Thutmose III occurred, or the accession of Amenhotep II is also argued by some as being November 17th, 1442 BCE. So we have the lunar dates of Amenhotep II. His year 1, there's a lunar date, which is lunar day 3, which is Koyak 1 in the Egyptian calendar. His year 3, there's a lunar day 2, which is 3rd Shemu 15, or Epaif 15. Year 4, there's a lunar day 15, which is a full moon, and that's a graffito, which is typically correct as a full moon. The stela being in lunar day 2, that's very near lunar day 1, which is when the stelas were also issued for the year 3 date. And for the year 1 date, that's just his accession, so we don't know. That's not got a particular lunar day associated with it, unless they wanted to make it a lunar day near the beginning of the month, perhaps, just for receiving the favor that they believed came with a waxing moon in their religion. So in year 4, we have the lunar day 15. In year 23, we have a lunar day 1, which is Koyak, or 4th Akhet 1. And that's a stela also occurring on lunar day 1, which is exactly when a stela normally occurs. So the alignments here look perfect with his year 1, assumed to be 1439. And that's what we've assumed, right? Now, we've assumed here that his 8 months, March 15th, 8 months before the accession date. So, yeah, his accession date. His year 1... of course, may have begun on the death of his predecessor, and I believe it was his father, too, Thutmose III. I'm trying to remember if that's his father, Thutmose III, as the father of Amenhotep, or whether Amenhotep had a different father for some reason. But, perhaps because Thutmose III didn't have children, but it's not really important in this paragraph to know that. We're just looking at the alignments in time and considering what it means that there was an 8-month gap, too. That's another thing, which is rather curious. But perhaps he just couldn't accede officially and become pharaoh until he was 18 years old. That's possible. We don't really understand everything about the Egyptians back that far. The year 23 lunar day 1 date would be lunar day minus 3, with year 1, 1442 BCE. So that's not very good. Lunar day minus 3. And it is a stela date on the anniversary of Amenhotep II's accession day, first day of the month, also favoring lunar day 1. First day of the Egyptian month, that is, right? Koyak 1. Right, that's the fourth date given, year 23 there above. It's fourth on the list of dates. There are four dates altogether, and this is the fourth one of the four, and it says Koyak 1, lunar day 1. It's the first of the Egyptian months. So that favors a lunar day 1, not a lunar day minus 3, because it's a stela. Stelas are not issued at the end of the month or towards the end of the month. It's always at the beginning of the month or perhaps the full moon sometimes. And so year 1, 1439 looks right. Year 1, 1442 also makes full moon, lunar day 15, December 24th, 1436, in the Julian calendar, as lunar day 13, December 25th, 1439, year 4. Lunar day 13 is not as good as a full moon, lunar day 15, especially considering that's a graffito. Graffitos were typically inscribed in honor of the dead person during the full moon festival, during that time period. So, again, it favors year 1, 1439, because Lunar day 13 is 2 days before the full moon festival began. Year 3, lunar day 2 with year 1, 1442. That's year 3, which is the lunar day 2 there. It's the second item on the list of dates. It was June 27th, 1437, which was lunar day 2, assuming 1439 year 1. But with year 1, 1442, it's June 28th, 1440. Thus, 2 days before new moon, and not a favored alignment again. All factors thus seem to favor year 1, 1439 BCE here. The reign of Amenhotep II confirms year 1, 1493 BCE for Thutmose III, assumed by the end of reign compellingly. That is, that Thutmose III assumed that year, 1493, as his year one by the end of his reign. And thus he subsumed Hatshepsut and also his father, because she had subsumed his father before he subsumed her. And in the footnote at the bottom here, in the English footnote, modern scholars, footnote 2, have found evidence of erasures of Hatshepsut's monuments and depictions, which, of the datable ones, begin in year 46 or 47 of Thutmose III, more than 20 years after she died. She died about year 22. But when he adopted her year 1 accession of May 1st, 1493 BCE, subsumed from Thutmose II, her husband, is less certain. And we see from the lunar dates up to year 24 that it occurred at some point. That's his year 24. Thutmose was the third's year 24. It occurred at some point thereafter, possibly about year 31 to 33. That's the end of our study of Wild Road for today. We're not going to study Exodus today because we want to let this catch up to the numerical value that we normally use, aligning it with the date of, in this case, the date being the number 7. So we're going to, where are we, on 9? What are we on? Yeah, we want to wait to get to 8 so we can do chapter 19, aligning with 8 because 9 minus 1 is 8. But we can do Proverbs for today, and that's Proverbs 6, verses 1 through 5. My son, if you have gone surety for your fellow man, if you have given your handshake even to the stranger, if you have been ensnared by the sayings of your mouth, if you have been caught by the sayings of your mouth, take this action then, my son, and deliver yourself, for you have come into the palm of your fellow man. Go, humble yourself, and storm your fellow man with importunities. Do not give any sleep to your eyes, nor any slumber to your beaming eyes. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hand, and like a bird from the hand of the bird catcher. That was Proverbs chapter 6. Good advice there. If you've promised something to your fellow man, whoever, to whomever you may have, or whomever you may have promised something to, you, if you've had a change of heart, then you need to deliver yourself. You need to storm your fellow man with importunities if you're in a situation where you really can't live with the thing that you've done by way of promising or shaking hands. That's what it says. Proverbs chapter 6. Excellent advice. You shouldn't just sit back and wait, you know, to see what happens, or to, you know, if you want, or you have, if you have to feel like you have to get out of that arrangement, if you feel like you have to withdraw from that agreement, then you should take action immediately. That's the principle from the wise scriptures, God's word, the Holy Bible. Now we're going to look at Luke's, we're going to finish up with Luke chapter 7 for today, finish up today's study, hopefully. So, Jesus gave his Sermon on the Mount in chapter 6, over which I stumbled a few times in trying to deliver it. And I mentioned how, you know, Jesus said the blind cannot lead the blind, can they? That was one of his sayings. When he had completed all his sayings in the hearing of the people, he entered into Capernaum. Now, a certain army officer's slave who was dear to him was ailing and was about to pass away. A certain army officer's slave, that's hard to say. When he heard about Jesus, he sent forth older men of the Jews to him to ask him to come and bring his slave safely through. It's all difficult to read from my viewpoint. Then those that came up to Jesus began to entreat him earnestly, saying, "He is worthy of your conferring this upon him, for he loves our nation, and he himself built the synagogue for us." So Jesus started off with them. But when he was not far from the house, the army officer had already sent friends to say to him, "Sir, do not bother, for I am not fit to have you come in under my roof. For that reason I did not consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and let my servant be healed. For I too am a man placed under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say to this one, 'Be on your way,' and he is on his way, and to another, 'Come,' and he comes, and to my slave, 'Do this,' and he does it." Well, when Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, and he turned to the crowd following him and said, "I tell you, not even in Israel have I found so great a faith." And those that had been sent on getting back to the house found the slave in good health. Closely following this, he traveled to a city called Nain. and his disciples and the great crowd were traveling with him. As he got near the gate of the city, why, look, there was a dead man being carried out, the only begotten son of his mother. Besides, she was a widow. A considerable crowd from the city was also with her. And when the Lord caught sight of her, he was moved with pity for her. And he said to her, stop weeping. With that he approached and touched the bier, and the bearers stood still. And he said, young man, I say to you, get up. And the dead man sat up and started to speak, and he gave him to his mother. Now fear seized them all, and they began to glorify God, saying, a great prophet has been raised up among us, and God has turned his attention to his people. And this news concerning him spread out into all Judea and all the surrounding country. Now John's disciples reported to him about all these things. So John summoned a certain two of his disciples and sent them to the Lord to say, are you the coming one, or are we to expect a different one? When they came up to him, the men said, John the Baptist dispatched us to you to say, are you the coming one, or are we to expect another? In that hour he cured many of sicknesses and grievous diseases and wicked spirits, and granted many blind persons the favor of seeing. Hence, in answer, he said to the two, go your way. Report to John what you saw and heard. The blind are receiving sight. The lame are walking. The lepers are being cleansed, and the deaf are hearing. The dead are being raised up. The poor are being told the good news. And happy is he who has not stumbled over me. When the messengers of John had gone away, he started to say to the crowds concerning John, what did you go out into the wilderness to behold? A reed being tossed by the wind? What then did you go out to see? A man dressed in soft outer garments? Why, those in splendid dress and existing in luxury are in royal houses. Really, then, what did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and far more than a prophet. This is he concerning whom it is written, look, I am sending forth my messenger before your face, who will prepare your way ahead of you. I tell you, among those born of women there is none greater than John, but a person that is a lesser one in the kingdom of God is greater than he is. And all the people and the tax collectors, when they heard this, declared God to be righteous, they having been baptized with the baptism of John. But the Pharisees and those versed in the law disregarded the counsel of God to them, they not having been baptized by him. With whom, therefore, shall I compare the men of this generation? And whom are they like? They are like young children sitting in a marketplace and crying out to one another, and who say, we played the flute for you, but you did not dance. We wailed, but you did not weep. Correspondingly, John the Baptist has come, neither eating bread nor drinking wine, but you say he has a demon. The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, but you say, look, a man gluttonous and given to drinking wine, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. All the same, wisdom is proved righteous by all its children. Now a certain one of the Pharisees kept asking him to dine with him. Accordingly, he entered into the house of the Pharisee and reclined at the table. And look, a woman who was known in the city to be a sinner learned that he was reclining at a meal in the house of the Pharisee, and she brought an alabaster case of perfumed oil, and taking a position behind at his feet, he was lying down evidently, she wept and started to wet his feet with her tears, and she would wipe them off with the hair of her head. Also, she tenderly kissed his feet and greased them with the perfumed oil. At the sight, the Pharisee that invited him said within himself, this man, if he were a prophet, would know who and what kind of woman it is that is touching him, that she is a sinner. But in reply, Jesus said to him, Simon, I have something to say to you. He said, teacher, say it. Two men were debtors to a certain lender. The one was in debt for 500 denarii, but the other for 50. When they did not have anything with which to pay back, he freely forgave them both. Therefore, which of them will love him the more? In answer, Simon said, I suppose it is the one to whom he freely forgave the more. He said to him, You judged correctly. With that, he turned to the woman and said to Simon, Do you behold this woman? I entered into your house. You gave me no water for my feet, but this woman wet my feet with her tears and wiped them off with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but this woman, from the hour that I came in, did not leave off tenderly kissing my feet. You did not grease my head with oil, but this woman greased my feet with perfumed oil. By virtue of this, I tell you, her sins, many though they are forgiven, because she loved much. But he who is forgiven little, loves little. Then he said to her, Your sins are forgiven. At this, those reclining at the table with him started to say within themselves, Who is this man who even forgives sins? But he said to the woman, Your faith has saved you. Go your way in peace. That's the end of Luke chapter 7. Jesus forgiving the woman who was a well-known sinner in the city for her exceptional love that she displayed toward him. And so, that's the end of our study. Little children, thank you for listening and watching. I hope you did enjoy it. As always, it's been enjoyable. We've praised Jehovah, and I love you very much. I love you all. And it's time for the conclusion of our study once again. Today we have Gully and Willie, because it's the Seagull Company that makes the movement in Gully. And this is the Hong Kong movement, the PT 5000 in Willie. They both run, you know, some seconds different from accurate time, but per day it's a reasonable number of seconds, far less than 30 seconds different. Even both, I believe, far less than, let me check, 46, 47, and we're at 58, so 10 seconds different, but this is after multiple days for Willie. And for Gully, it's just about 2,000 hours. Is that true? Yes, it's 2,000 hours. It's May 7th. Gully is just after, oh my goodness, yeah, Gully's just about bang on. Right now, accurate, because she was slow before, so very close. They're both quite close. So, it's May 7th, 2023. It's 2,000 hours. Amazing timing. And in my behalf, it's Gully and Willie saying bye for now.